everyone, and welcome to Teach Me Teacher, a podcast for educators, where we, the teachers, become students ourselves. I'm your host, Jacob Chastain, and today we are talking all about teaching writing to middle school students. All right, guys, today I'm sitting here with one of my favorite teachers here at RMS for a variety of reasons. Last year, she helped me with my inclusion students. She was very great in the class. Now she has her own classroom teaching writing, which is why we're talking to her today. Miss Bannister, how are we doing today?
I am doing well. Thank you for having me.
And for those, you know, just for full disclosure, I've tried to say her name 9 times on the podcast, just trying to get it right because I can't, because that's the kind of day you have on a Friday when you're trying to podcast after teaching. Which reminds me to thank you for being here on a Friday, because I know it's hard, especially when all the students are, they're gone and all you want to do is
take a nap.
Yep. But we're going to podcast. It's going to be awesome. So just to kind of get things rolling, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into all the writing stuff and before all the helpful stuff. Let's talk about who you are so we know who we're talking to. So, Bannister, where'd you come from? Why are you a teacher? How did you become a teacher at RMS?
I was born and raised North Richland Hills, Texas.
Whoop, whoop.
I'm a second generation graduate of the Birdville ISD district. I went through the district, graduated from Richland High School. At Richland is where I saw my true passion that I wanted to be a teacher. But I just never knew really what I wanted to teach. I thought I wanted to teach speech, and then that kind of was slowly not becoming a class anymore. So I was kind of searching for what I wanted to do. My older brother has special needs, so my mom always had me help him with his homework. And through that, I kind of realized that I was like, oh, I can actually do this for the rest of my life. Because I grew up around individuals with special needs, and I really saw that that might be my passion, where my heart was. So I went to college, 4 years at SFA, graduated with a degree in special education. I got certified EC through 12 in special education. I'm ESL certified. And then I got a job here at Richland Middle School as an inclusion teacher, where I was able to teach sixth grade reading with Mr. Chastain.
Now, inclusion isn't everywhere. So why don't you tell us a little bit briefly, for those who aren't familiar in other states or in other countries, what's inclusion like here in Texas?
So inclusion is where the special education students are in the least restrictive environment, which means that they are able to be in the general education setting, and they just need accommodations and a little more help, but they're able to stay on level with their peers.
Awesome. So after you became or you taught inclusion last year, then what?
I taught inclusion last year, and I realized that I loved inclusion, but I actually loved teaching English and reading more. So an opportunity showed itself to become an English teacher for sixth grade, and I took it, and I'm running with it. So here I am.
And the kids are obsessed with you.
I don't know if obsessed is the right word.
I would say they're obsessed. I mean, that's a pretty good thing. I mean, I saw you connect with them last year, and you were able to work wonders with a lot of kids who struggled through school. You had patience and, like, determination and all the good things you need to work with kids that need a lot of help. And now that you have your own classroom, it's pretty cool to watch. Like, I'm across the hall, and you're all over the place. So you're in it. Even on, like, days where they're rowdy, you're in it. And you're never, like, kind of, you know, it doesn't seem like you're ever beaten down. It's like, all right, let's go. Let's keep this rolling.
I hit every day with the ground running. Like, we're going to do this today. No matter how we're acting, we're going to get through it, and it's going to be great. And I think that coming in with that attitude, every new class coming in, you just kind of starting fresh, it really starts the kids off fresh, too, because then you don't let any of the other factors come into the class.
Yeah, I totally agree. Now, this directly connects to kind of where I want to take this episode, which is writing. A lot of kids have weird anxieties when it comes to writing, because a lot of them don't write a lot. Like, you don't write a lot in elementary school. I mean, you write a little bit, and you write narratives and stuff like that, but there's really no academic standing. So when you come to sixth grade, it's almost like a punch in the face sometimes when it comes, because we're all of a sudden, we're like, you know, use citations and prove your answers and make rational arguments. And they're just kind of like, what the heck is going on? It's a different type of writing. So when they come here, they get this anxiety about what they're doing, almost like math anxiety, right? And same thing for kind of reading, because before it was just reading for fun. Now they kind of have to apply their reading to something that matters a little more. So when you knew you were becoming a writing teacher, what was going through your head? I'm like, okay, what am I going to do to get these kids into writing? Did that pass through your head as you were becoming a writing teacher?
Oh, absolutely. I was in two writing classes last year, and it was a struggle with some of those kids, like trying to get them to write and trying to get them to write to the prompt or to the topic that the teacher wanted them to write to. It was such a struggle. So I really just wanted to rack my brain and figure out what I could do to make my students be more independent writers and also more encouraged to write.
So what were some of the things that you decided that you were going to do this year to kind of fire them up with writing?
Well, I took this awesome training this summer that our district gives us.
Provides
us, yeah. And it was an amazing opportunity. It's called Abydos, and it literally took my teaching world and flipped it upside down. And I was like, man, like it was like a, like just like someone turned on the lights. I was like, this is how a classroom should be. Why is no one doing this? It like astounded me that no one did this. So I learned a lot of awesome strategies in there that definitely helped me coming into this year, to help those students that don't really like writing or they haven't written a lot in their life. You have some kids that come in and they're like, how long should a paragraph be? And they still don't even know what a period is. So it's definitely helped.
Don't capitalize things. And
oh, yes.
Yeah, just the basics of grammar. Just not, they're not always in the toolbox.
They're not always there. Correct.
And that I mean, that's a big hill to climb. Especially when we're requiring them to write, you know, academic papers. Right? I mean, that's like going from day one, all right, this is what, you know, you should capitalize I. To making a coherent argument for your point, that's a really big gap to cover in a year. So I can imagine there was some stress just thinking about, like, the hill. Or was there? Like, did you really ever feel like this is a huge hill to climb? Or how did you approach the task that you were about to have for the year?
I don't feel like I was ever stressed. I was just like, I'm going to go in because I thought I'd go in with an open mind, be like, maybe I'll come in and my students, they're going to know what they need to know. But I mean, as a first year teacher, that was definitely overthinking it.
Right, right.
But I just kind of came in and took it one step at a time, kind of doing the pre-assessments. But then I would cover the teaks that we need to do and kind of throw the ones that, you know, they should have been taught or they should have already known, like, the prior knowledge. And I kind of just throw them in there so that they don't really know that we're reteaching it, but we're going back over it.
Yeah.
It's the easiest way for me to figure out how to cover all the teaks I need to this year, as well as reteaching all the ones from K through 5th.
You've mentioned several times, just in passing, like, Abydos was kind of like your training. I think a lot of teachers have those moments where they go to one specific training. You know, sometimes it's Kagan, sometimes it's Abydos, sometimes it's a book they read or a seminar, and it just kind of blows everything out of the water, and you're like, this is my jam, right? So what was it about Abydos specifically that, like, hit all the good centers in your brain, and you're like, this is what I'm doing this year?
It started, like, the first day. So we went in not knowing what to expect. We sit down, we're all just kind of looking around, and then our instructor doesn't say a word, goes to the board and writes, "We're writing today, will you join us?" And then just walks away. We all kind of look at each other like, does that mean we're supposed to write? And so after a while we started writing, and then they had a share. I was like, wait, I don't know anybody in this room, and you want me to share what I wrote?
Yeah.
But it was kind of breaking that seal and kind of creating a safe community, like, right off the bat. so that we had to read what we were writing, because I think a lot of kids also have a fear of reading, like, what they've written.
Yeah.
Like, they don't want to share it because they're afraid they're going to be ridiculed or that it's not going to be as good as the person sitting next to them. I learned so many strategies about sharing, about positivity within the writing, but also kind of taking writing and giving it to the kids, giving the responsibility to them. So instead of giving a prompt, because that's just a box, okay? When you give them a prompt, they're in a box. But whenever you allow them to have the freedom and you just give them guidelines, like when we were doing personal narratives this year, I didn't say, you need to write about a journey that you took and when you learned a lesson. I just said, it needs to have a hook and it needs to have a theme. And I left it at that. I remember last year we had this prompt and it took forever. Like, we were trying to get kids to at least write a paragraph. I had kids turning in 6-page papers, like on level kids, because they were trying to get their story down and they covered all the basics. You kind of just leave it up to them. They take the responsibility. You teach them what they need to go over, the teeks they need to know. They need to know theme. They need to know how to write a hook, and then they need to know how to do prepositions. Those were the three things I was going to be grading. And that's what I graded on. I didn't grade on like the grammatics, the bones of it all. Mm-hmm. I just graded on, you know, I guess it's instead of grading on like the content and having everything perfect in the paragraphs indented, you know how those strict teachers that just go through and are like, oh, you don't have your 2-inch indention and you forgot a period here. I just looked for the things that we went over and we discussed, and then they were responsible for going through and finding everything else. And so for me, I felt like the kids were not stressed. Their papers were, they thought it was completely easy. You know, it was a great way to start off the year. So now as the year goes on, we're just kind of building on that as we go on.
Yeah, and what's funny is this is kind of a theme, I guess, in ELA. You know, we haven't had a reading episode where we talk about what we're doing in reading, but it's almost the same concept where you're taking the boxes, unnecessary boxes away. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no reason to box your kids into a prompt. Mm-hmm. Like, there literally is no advantage to a prompt other than if that prompt is, like, you have, like, it's an argumentative essay where you have to go against, like, a claim the prompt's making, right? That's the only type, something that triggers a response is really the only time you need it. If they're, if your theme or, you know, whatever else you're covering, why? Why in the world would you have to control what they wrote about?
And I feel like also with the box and the prompting, sometimes you give them a prompt, and like our kids haven't experienced that.
Yeah.
You know, they're sixth grade, and some of them, you know, if you say, oh, tell about a time you went on vacation. Well, you know, our school, we're at a Title I school. Some of the kids, you know, a vacation is going down the street or, you know, going going to Dallas, going to Fort Worth. And so, you know, and they're kind of embarrassed by that. And so you kind of have to, like, if you take that box away, all that stress and anxiety that comes with writing and making sure that they have a story for the prompt goes away. And then it's like, you know, it's a free-for-all. Everyone can write what they want to write.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting because we're storytelling, like, we're a storytelling species. Like, we've been doing it forever.
Mm-hmm.
So the writing part is really, I guess I feel like that's where that anxiety comes from, just because they're not skilled writers. Anytime you're not skilled at something, there's going to be some anxiety with doing it. But once you kind of let them forget that they're writing and they're creating, I guess, and that natural creation comes in, I guess, it seems like that's where you're going to get your best writing because they're not thinking about it, so it's just going to come.
Yeah.
Right? Do you see that in the papers they're turning in?
Absolutely.
I mean, is it fairly high quality stuff or?
Some of them are, yeah. Some of them, you can see that they have really been taking the free writing process seriously. And I feel like I've had a higher percentage this year with those quality works than the lower quality works. The kids are really taking pride in their ownership in their papers and what they've written. And they want me to read it. Like, instead of just like, oh, I just want to put this in the pile at the bottom and so you don't have to see it. No, the kids are coming up to me like, oh, Miss B, I think this is so good. Can you read it? You know, they're taking that ownership.
So this actually brings up an interesting point. If they're, you know, if they're really invested in this process and they turn in something, do you ever feel bad for critiquing it? Or how do you handle your critiques of something that they feel that's personal? Because once it's personal, you correcting even something about theme is like you correcting them as a personal person, right? It's almost like you're correcting them a little bit. Or am I off base? How have you handled critiquing in your class so far?
I only critique their writing with the things I'm looking for. So theme, I would say, well, that's not at... It's not specific, or it's too specific to the story. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Instead of being more broad, we need a more broad theme, because I explained it as every book on my shelf has a different topic, but more than one of those books could have the same theme. So, like, it has to be something that goes over multiple things. So I would just discuss that with them. So that was the only time I'd ever critiqued our themes. Mm-hmm. Hooks, we went through. They picked the best one. I told them which one I thought was the best one, and they could decide from there. But I never go through and say, well... You know, I think you should have added more to this, or what about this, or I don't really like this here, because for me, that's just, I mean, that's the first paper they're turning in. If I go through and I just start marking things out, that's going to discourage them, and they're going to shut down for the rest of the year.
Sure.
They're not going to want to write. So I just only critique the things that we have talked about, that they have learned, that we have discussed, so that we could go. So I don't really feel like, I mean, I guess it could be discouraging if they're like, no, but this is really what I learned. But I feel like one sentence compared to a whole paper kind of outweighs.
Abydos, you're sitting there and they tell you to write and you're kind of developing this idea of free write and all that stuff. What were the major points of this training? Was it like you should free write and then here's some standards and you should put it all together? Or what was kind of the goal of the whole training? Like, what, I know you're still in it, like it's still going, mm-hmm. this Abydos training, but when you were this initial boost, how did they focus what you were supposed to be doing in the classroom that you could take back and do?
The main idea is just to create independent writers who enjoy writing. It's kind of like, I like to discuss it as like kind of falling in love with writing again, because I'm not gonna lie, before I went to Abydos, I loved grammar. I'm good at grammar. I'm good at the mechanics. But I wasn't really a big writer. Like, because I felt like my whole life I was always put in this box. And I always had it. I just had a fear and anxiety that I wasn't going to create something that the teacher would want to read. And so I always wanted to be reassured with my writing. So I've never been really a good free writer. But as I took this training, we would have to free write often. We would sit down for an hour every day and just write. Mm-hmm. There'd be some times where they're like, you can't pick up your pencil for the next 10 minutes. Which was really good, because then I just started like, whatever came to my mind, I was writing. And I was able to get thoughts down on paper. But also, they taught us that whatever you expect the kids to do, you should do also. So anytime the instructor told us to write, they were writing. So in my classroom, anytime my kids are writing, I'm writing. Anytime they write a paper, I write a paper. And I put them up on the board, and I show them, you know, every step that we take. So I have a rough draft, and we go through, and I fix it, and we go back through, and then I have a final copy. So they're able to see each step and each process that I'm going through that they're going through too. So I think that's a big deal also, is like you kind of modeling everything, mm-hmm. and kind of creating that safe environment.
6 times a day.
Yes.
That's a lot of writing for you.
Well, sometimes you can write anything. That's the whole point of it, though. You can write absolutely anything in free writing. So we free write for the first 5 minutes of class. Absolutely anything. You can write a list. You can write a grocery list. I have prompts on my board. I have quotes on my board. I tell my kids, you can tell me how to complete a level on a video game that they like. You can give me a recap of a football game. I don't care, as long as that pencil is moving. And so for me, sometimes it's really hard, because while my kids are writing, like, I have to re-pick up and remember where I left off.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it's more difficult, because when I'm given an hour and then now I'm giving myself 5 minutes to like get back on track and get going. I think that's what's so hard sometimes, is kind of getting your thought process back. But I do a lot of short writings, just kind of what's on my mind, what I'm observing at that moment.
Well, you know what? I think that's a really good point to pay attention to them too, because they're coming from another class,
mm-hmm.
where who knows what was happening in there.
Absolutely.
I mean, it could have been, mm-hmm. there could have been a fight. It could have been a loose class because the teacher had a day where they were just kind of on their own. They could have done something fun in PE. So they have a million different things happening. They come to your class and they have to write. So there's that adjustment process, mm-hmm. that you have to go through too.
Mm-hmm.
which I think it's important to know, like to realize that too, for anyone that wants to try this, is to be, there's a thinking process that goes down.
Yes. Sometimes 5 minutes turns into like 10 minutes because I'll see that some of the kids are having a little bit harder of a time, but they're trying to think and they're trying to get something down on paper. And so I'll give them a little bit longer of a time. I kind of just like wait out by class, but if they're real antsy, then I just kind of, all right, 5 minutes are done. But I never set a timer. I just, you know, if they're writing, they're writing. When I kind of tell that they're kind of finished, then I start wrapping it up.
I feel like, I always think when we have certain conversations, and some of my conversations we have on here are very like, structure this, structure that, make sure everything's kind of controlled. And a lot of my other conversations are, yeah, you know, just feel it a little bit. And I feel like teachers that are real antsy, that are just super anal about everything, have a heart attack every time someone goes, yeah, you know, just roll with it. It'll be okay. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So do you have trouble just letting it be, or is that your comfortable state to be in?
It's really weird because in my own life, like, I'm very schedule-oriented. Like, I need to know what's happening, where I need to be. But when I'm in the classroom, I'm just kind of like, I'm awful at time management. Like, that's where I struggle in the classroom, is having that time management.
You never feel like you finish anything. That's how I feel. Like.
Every day. Every day. And it's probably because when I see my kids writing and they're into it, I want to have them write because sometimes that's like a rare moment when they're sitting there writing for 10 minutes and they're into their writing. I don't want to cut off that creative process. So that's probably where my weakness is.
Well, you know, it's the same thing for English and reading are very interesting subjects to teach because for a long time, especially when me and you were kids, we were still being taught in a way that was very systematic.
Yes.
This was your prompt, you wrote this, this is the book you read this. And after a decade of that, things are changing. And we're going to have an episode on this later, so I don't want to talk about it too much. But education, especially in ELA, ELAR, we are evolving about what the brain needs to learn writing, how reading and writing connect. And one of the big processes that I love that you do is having them write. Because what do you teach? You teach writing.
Right?
And what should they be doing?
Writing.
Yeah. And is that, I feel like that's something Abydos would have put front in, like, in the forefront is, hey, you're a writing teacher, so let's write.
Like, I'm not trying to knock other teachers.
Sure.
But I've been into ELA classrooms where the only time they are writing is when they're doing a paper, which is, you know, 2 weeks out of the 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how are they going to get better if they don't practice it? You got to practice every single day to become a better writer.
That's like asking a basketball player to get better at shooting, and all he's doing is cleaning the floor. Like, it's,
he's only playing games.
Yeah, I mean, only playing games. It's like it's not going to work.
No, it's not.
And I mean, yeah, there might be like a talented person that, you know, but and that's kind of the thing is that there's this. I feel like this closes the gap. Because there's always going to be those kids that are going to be good writers no matter what, right? I mean, they have good genes, they read a lot, you know, whatever it is that makes them a good writer, there's that person. But that gap between them and the kid that has never written before and he's not going to get better because you don't practice enough, I feel like just the same way classroom structures kind of bring all the kids together and they equally raise up, I feel like letting them free write and be in that moment also helps. Do you see that in your classroom?
Absolutely. I mean, I've seen it with like the reading classrooms, having them like read at the beginning, and I feel like writing every single day has helps them create a structure. And I told them, we're writing every single day unless I tell you otherwise. Well, we don't read every single day. Write. They write Monday and Tuesday, then we break it up. Wednesday they read, and then they write Thursday and Friday. And so it's just like it's a structure. You know, they know that they have to get their notebook out, they have to write.
So what's the deal with the one day of reading? What does that do for you as a writing teacher?
It definitely brings the literature aspect into the classroom, as well as it kind of breaks up the week. So, I mean, I kind of get bored of things after a while.
Uh-huh.
Not in a bad way, but I just felt like if I had them write 5 days a week, it might be a little monotonous. If we break it up and they read on Wednesdays, then it's able to split up the week. But also that reading piece on Wednesdays, if I was going and teaching prepositions, I've done this before, you can go through whatever you read today. I need you to find 5 examples of prepositions in the book that you read. So it's kind of like using their books within the writing classroom when I'm teaching.
That's another thing that seems like it should just be obvious. Right? But, you know, I always think back to, you know, how I was taught. And not every teacher taught me so systematically, but it was like, you know, we didn't do that back in the day. And, you know, who knows, you know, and we're fairly young. Like, we've been, like, we're both really young. I can just imagine what it would be like for teachers that have been in the game for a long time. And, you know, all of a sudden they're being asked to, you know, have a different style of classroom. This is how we're learning now. To the point of developing writers, unless you have magic going on in here, surely you have some students that rebel against writing every day or something like that.
Absolutely.
So what's going on with them? How do you handle the kids that are really pushing back against the daily writing and the free writing?
When I'm writing up there, I kind of pay attention and glance up every now and then. If I see they're not writing, I come over there and I just kind of have a discussion with them. Like, hey, dude, like, why aren't we writing today? And they're like, I have nothing to write about. And I go, okay, well, let's remember, okay, I have my prompt on the board. We also have the quote. Like, did you do something fun this weekend? Or are you going to do something fun this weekend? Did your favorite sports team play? You know, have you visited a family member recently? Like, I just kind of start going down a list.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, wait, I got something. And I'm like, okay, awesome, write it. And sometimes my reluctant writers like to talk during free writing time. What I end up telling them, I'm like, whatever you're about to say with your mouth, you're going to put down on paper. Write a note. I don't care.
Yeah.
Whatever you're about to say to the person sitting next to you, write a note. They can read it later. But I mean, sometimes it's just, they're still like, I don't have anything to write about. And I think it's just kind of because they're so used to not writing. They don't have that practice. And so even if I could just get them to write just a little phrase every single day, it's going to build up over time. That's the whole point of it. It's just building it up, building up their stamina. It's kind of like reading. Like, you know, they get tired after reading a page, but then after reading a page ever so many days, you know, they can read two pages, and it just kind of builds that stamina.
Yeah. But are there kids that just physically hate reading or writing? They just are so against it. Or is that really never happened?
I don't have anybody this year that's just been just standing firm and not writing. I haven't had anybody.
That's awesome.
Some days kids are having a little harder of a time. I do have more reluctant ones, but they're not just kind of like, I ain't doing it.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it today, no matter what you say. So, and I don't know if that's just because how I set up my classroom, but I haven't come across any yet, so kind of lucky.
Yeah. Cross fingers.
Right? Knock on wood.
Yeah. writer's journals.
Mm-hmm.
How do you use them? What's in your writer's journals? What do you expect from them to use or to do in these journals in order to be compliant with what you want?
Well, we put everything in our writer's journals. We have our table contents at the front, and then the next couple pages is our grammar section. So I always have a handout, whether we're doing prepositions or talking about nouns and verbs. I have some kind of little printout that they paste in there. And everybody puts them on the same pages, so I'm able to tell them what to refer to. So, like, if we're looking for prepositions one day, I can be like, all right, remember the prepositions. They're on page 6 in your writer's notebook if you need help. Then after that, we have our encyclopedia, which I haven't introduced yet because I didn't want to overwhelm them at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be something I introduce in the third 6 weeks. The encyclopedia is based off of the book, The Encyclopedia of an Ordinary Life. I think that's what it's called, right?
I think so.
Yeah. And so that's where...
Sounds right.
So every page is a different letter of the alphabet, and they can go through, and if they have something that's bugging them or that they want to write about that's happening in their life, they go through and find the page, and they write just a little short story for it. So I'm going to introduce that the third 6 weeks. And then the rest of the notebook is free write and pre-writing. We put everything back there. That's where they write every day. If we do any kind of pre-writing strategies... that's where we put it. Like, we did like sentence stems, or we did something called blueprinting, where they made a blueprint of their favorite place, wrote down memories, and then they taped it in there, and they had to pick one that day and write about it. But they can always go back to it if they need help figuring out something to write about when they're free writing. So everything's back there. And that's how I do my journal.
You know, I'd almost seen just hearing, like, the little snippets of what you're having them do in the journal.
Mm-hmm.
It's... I never thought about writing like this before. It's almost like you have a really wide open curriculum.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because there's, I mean, you're not limited really in anything except for how you teach them what they need, because you obviously have to have lessons where you teach them, you know, the basic skills or, mm-hmm. you know, theme or whatever else. But for the most part, when it comes to the product they're giving you,
mm-hmm.
it's
based on what I asked for.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of nice.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, it's like a dream.
Yeah.
In some ways. Do you ever feel like that affects the grades you're giving them? You know, when you're trying to get, like, does it ever, like, the wide openness of it, does that ever change how you're inspecting them? Or is it really, when you're grading, it's always just about the standards that you're kind of looking at?
I feel like it is hard because sometimes I'll get a paper and I'm like, oh man, like they didn't use any periods. But no, we didn't talk about punctuation this 6 weeks. So that's not something I can grade on. So it's kind of like difficult. But it definitely tells me what I need to discuss next 6 weeks, you know? So seeing what they were able to implement this 6 weeks, showed me what I need to continue next 6 weeks. But it's, I mean, sometimes the wide openness scares me. It's like very scary to think about, because it can make grading hard if you don't do it right.
Sure.
But I don't feel like it was that hard this 6 weeks. But as, you know, it goes on, you know, it could definitely get more difficult.
Sure. Do you plan on having some type of grammar requirement? Like, I know some teachers, after Christmas, it's, all right, you get strikes for, you know, not capitalizing certain things or not punctuating correctly. Is that in your mindset, or?
Oh, after we finish the poetry unit, it's going to get a little more strict with the capitalization and the punctuation, because my thing is, we kind of have reviewed it. They've had practice on it, mm-hmm. and you're a sixth grader, you know, capitalizing an I, something we learned, what, first grade? You know, periods, we should know when to put a period in a sentence. So I feel like there's going to be a time where I have to put my foot down as far as grammar, but as far as, like, the content they give me, I feel like it's going to still be wide open, as long as it follows the guidelines of the TEEQ. So if they're doing research, then they need to give me a research paper, not a personal narrative. So it's kind of like, there's still a box, but the box is, like, way bigger.
When you're introducing something new, like you're in the poetry unit,
mm-hmm.
Right now, what type of stuff are you showing them as a model? Are you showing poetry? Are you showing your writing? Because poetry's, one, it's super hard to comprehend for sixth mm-hmm. graders. But it's also varied really widely in structure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's strict poetry, there's narrative poetry, there's sonnets, and, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that goes into. So I can imagine showing kids, you know, it's like, hey, here's all this random stuff, like, like picking stuff to model. So how do you go about modeling something as difficult as poetry?
Well, we've only written one poem so far,
okay.
and it was real basic. It's called A Color Poem, and it just said, like, you picked a color, and he said, we'd also talked about imagery, so we implied that in it, and just say, yellow makes me feel, and then we had to put something. And so I modeled one on the board with them. We used purple, and we gave three different examples of, like, what it made you feel like, what it looked like, what it felt like. I don't know if I said felt yet, but we just kind of went through. And I modeled that with them. And then I gave them a piece of poetry, had them read it. We kind of did more of a close reading with it.
Mm-hmm.
Had them read it. They defined the words, and then I read it with them and discussed it. Just open discussion. Like, okay, what did you notice about this? And they were like, it's about... And I'm like, come on, answers. And so they kind of liked that, and it was also free verse. I was not about to bring out the rhyming ones, because I'm not going to lie. I don't like rhyming poems. I mean, I love to read them.
Sure.
But I cannot write them. It's really difficult for me. So I'm way more of a free verse person.
Mm-hmm.
So next week, we are going to start a project, like a poetry book. And we are giving them 8 types of poems. And they can pick the 5 that they want to do and put them in the book. But what I'm doing is I'm writing one for each example. So that I'm not finding them online, I'm going to write them so that I can say, this is what I wrote, but we're also going to model them. So it's kind of like a happy medium between modeling, writing your own, and then kind of setting them free.
Mm-hmm. Did Abydos talk about, I mean, clearly they talked about you working with your students, you know, what mm-hmm. you ask them to do, you do yourself. Mm-hmm. But did they talk about why cognitively that works for them? Why being with them or showing your writing and being vulnerable in your stuff? Like how did they talk about why that is good for a student to have?
I feel like if you don't do it, it's kind of a double standard. Like, oh, I'm expecting you to do it, but I don't expect myself to do it.
Well, it's interesting
like
because...
Like hypocritical.
Sure. But it's interesting that that's how we're thinking now because I feel teaching not so long ago, and even there are a lot of teachers now who are very much like, of course it's a double standard. I'm the teacher. You sit there and you do the work. I grade you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, we know there's teachers like that today to where they're just like, no, why do I have to do this? You do it, right? I feel mm-hmm. like this is a shift in education. I know it's a shift because there's so many trainings that talk about breaking the boundaries between mm-hmm. us and them. But there's a little bit of vulnerability there
mm-hmm.
for you.
It is. Right? It's really nerve-wracking because I'm like, I don't know if the students are going to like this or... I don't want them to think that they have to write something to my standard.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like when I'm writing with them, it really takes, it kind of gives them a sense of pride and it gives me a sense of pride. I don't know if that's the right word to describe it, but it shows them like, oh, well, Miss B's willing to write with us. Like, not a lot of teachers are willing to do that. So I feel like I want to write with her too. You know what I'm saying? Like,
sure.
They're willing to do it because you're willing to do it. It's just like they feed off your energy. Like, if you're positive, most likely they're going to be positive. If you're upset, they're going to be upset. If you are writing, most likely they're going to want to write too.
What about the kid who's just knocking it out of the park? Right? We got GT students. We have really hardworking students. We have kids that love writing, like just classic storytellers that are just waiting to publish books in 20 years or however long it takes them.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things that you've done or you find yourself doing naturally with these students to just kind of push them a little bit?
I feel like this 6 weeks, it was hard because I wanted to build that positive atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
so I didn't know if pushing them was at, I was at that right point where I could push them yet.
Okay.
But after reading papers, I was like, man, this is really good. Like, I wish, you know, maybe next time I can see where I could push her a little bit harder, or I can push this student a little further. As far as how I'm going to do that, I know for sure that I like to challenge them in trying to find new words for those basic words, even though they, you know, might be a higher level writer and they wrote 6 pages.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they still might have some of those kind of, you know, okay-ish, I call them okay-ish words. And so going back through and finding synonyms for them to make their writing more interesting or adding that extra, you know, adjectives or descriptive words. But, you know, it's hard. It's hard to see them, too. See them coming, they just fly out, and they hand their paper, and you're like, where have you been all 6 weeks? I've lost you.
Yeah, it's true.
It's
totally
true.
You get lost in the sea of things.
Absolutely. I had one girl turn in a paper, and I was like, whoa, I didn't even know you could do this. And I felt so bad, but it was so awesome.
Were there any misconceptions you had about what your job was as a writing teacher? Like, because surely, I mean, obviously you knew you had standards and you knew you had to teach writing and avoid the obvious stuff. But were there misconceptions? You're like, you know, this is going to happen this way. Then you got into the classroom and you're like, that's not going to happen this way.
Yeah. I quickly figured out that students cannot write if they are looking eye to eye to another student. Complete misconception, because I have this whole idea, oh yeah, groups are going to be lovely. No, it was not a good idea. Misconceptions.
That's a good one, though.
Right?
Because everyone wants to put kids in groups. Or not everyone, but a lot of teachers want that.
Because if they're writing and someone's doing something in front of them, they're peripheral, they're going to be able to see it, so.
Well, even if the other kid's just like staring out, like it's probably, I imagine that could be.
If they have
awkward.
That one student who is not motivated to write, it's going to ruin everybody at the group. I mean, they've already been proven, like, like coming in, I was like, man, I'm going to have to like teach to these prompts and like I'm going to have the same product over and over and over again. But then, you know, once I did all these trainings, I realized, oh, the district's telling me I don't have to do that, but I thought I didn't have to do it. Well, if the districts are saying I don't have to, then I'm not going to. So that was a huge misconception. I think that was my biggest fear is like, how am I get these students to write a paper about energy when I'm not motivated to write a paper about energy myself?
Well, that's actually a good point because, you know, if you're not motivated to do something, you don't want to do it. But what about you as the teacher? So writing is one of the most notorious things for being difficult to grade.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so much of it. It's not checking if they answered A. It's checking all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you simplify it to like, you know, if it's a hook, then really you're just reading the hooks. But you're still reading. It takes more time to do that. So how have you dealt with the load of writing that you're having to look at? What's your process? I mean, are you reading every single word every time? Are you taking all of these home? Because like the image I've talked to with other writing teachers or teachers that I've written before, they're like, oh my God, I was just reading all the time. And, you know, it's just all these papers all the time. Is that how you feel, or have you have a magic trick?
No,
for
I feel like it's enjoyable because I was able to see kind of the beginning works. I knew what their topic was and I knew what their hook was going to be, but I was excited to see where they were going to take their paper from there. I hadn't read anything since we wrote a hook. That was it. And so for me, it was like unwrapping a box, and I was able to read all the papers, and not one of them was the same, and so it's quite easy. But it's also easy, I feel like, as far as the grading process, because we do something called ratiocination, where they go through and they check off the things that I'm also going to be looking for. So they underline every other sentence, and if they see they got a whole paragraph underlined, then that means, I was like, what does that mean, guys? And they're like, oh, we forgot punctuation. I go, correct. And so they kind of did all that for me. Like, I didn't have to go through and grade that. Like, they checked it all before I went in there, which is so much better because, I don't know, I felt like when I was in school, they'd just be like, okay, revise your papers, edit your papers. I'd be like, well, I don't know what to do with this. Like, what am I supposed to look for?
Yeah, I remember trading papers and doing that.
Oh, I did not like it.
I loved it, but I'm so, like, everything I write, I think, is the greatest thing ever. It's a problem.
See, and I'm the, like, I hate, after I write something, I hate reading it myself. I hate reading it myself. I'd rather someone else read it, edit it for me, and then give it back to me. So, definitely having that partner work in here is definitely a huge help. But, I don't know, I really didn't dread grading. It really didn't take me that long.
That's
just
awesome.
Went through, read them.
Well, the secret might be is it's all different.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're... You know, there's, we have a trainer, Kate Nelson here. You know, she goes, don't ever have them write about something you don't want to read.
Correct.
Like, don't make them write about energy if that's the last thing on the world you want to read about.
I do not want to read about energy at all. So I'm not going to have them write about it.
Yeah.
Because how much can you write about energy?
Sure.
And I mean, they're sixth grade. So they're all going to find the same information about it, and they're all going to write the same paper. For me, that sounds really boring. I do not want to read that all weekend.
Yeah. And so one thing that I found that works really well, and it connects to exactly what you just said, you know, about, you know, giving them something that they want to write about and that you want to read. I find that when I'm happy as a teacher – like, when I'm happy with what we're doing and I'm totally behind and I feel like it's creative and entertaining them, and I feel like I get entertained back by them. And yes. The learning's better.
Yes.
Like, by me being entertained by them, like, it's so much better for all of us together.
Mm-hmm.
And the grades go up and the learning seems to go up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Sometimes people write things and I'm like, man, that's hilarious. Like, what? We also did something where I showed them a picture and they had... Everybody started writing a story about the picture, and then they switched, and the next person continued their story as they continued the person's stories next to them. It's called writing roulette, and they kept on going. Man, some of the things that they came up with for these pictures were the funniest things. And I'm like, this is great. Like, we can do this more often. Like, you're able to handle it. But then they also enjoyed it, too. And so they were like, can we do that? Can we do writing roulette? Like, I'm like, oh, I can give you free time. They're like, no, we want to do writing roulette. And I was like, oh, that makes my ELA heart so happy because they want to do it. When I put activities out there like that, they want to do it. And I'm like, they think that they're having fun, but they're really writing.
Yeah. And they're developing.
Yes.
Yeah. That's awesome. Final question.
Okay.
One last thing. Mm-hmm. I always try to end every episode with just some quick advice that you would give to someone who's listening to this. Say they're maybe they're trying to spice up their writing classroom because they've been teaching writing for the same thing. They've been using the same prompts for 40 years or 30 or however long. Or maybe they're new like you and they're just like, and they're terrified about writing and they're not really sure what to do or something like that. So what's some advice that you would give to either the veteran or the new person about what you've learned so far in your journey as a writing teacher?
I feel like the game changer was just kind of giving them options. Like, I know you go to so many trainings and you're like, let them pick their topics. But I mean, honestly and truly, just let them have the ownership of their paper. Let them choose what they want to write about as long as it's within the very, very big box that you have to do it in. I think that was the biggest thing, is changing your writing class from teaching to that little box to teaching to the big box of the world.
Thank you, Ms. Bannister, for being here today with me on Teach Me Teacher. Great episode. I love talking ELA anytime. If I could just do a podcast about ELAR, I probably would, but I don't have enough time. Now, for everyone else listening, visit teachmeteacherpodcast.com where you can get all the posts, all of our archive stuff. You can leave comments, submit requests for episodes, do all of that fun stuff. Visit us on Facebook. Hit that like button.
Yes.
The blue like button.
Or the little, you can click the like button and turn it into a little heart because you love your podcast.
You can do that. Oh, and you can hit the share button. That way everyone sees the episode everywhere. Otherwise, share this with your team. Have a good one.